and a free press was designed in a secular sense to do what prophets did in a religious sense in the Old Testament, to hold the leaders of this nation their feet right to the fire. Now, the free press doesn't do necessarily what it's supposed to do, but that's the purpose of a free press. The free press is to be a prophetic voice against the leaders of the country. When a free press joins up with the leaders of the country, then you have no problems. And we've seen this happen, haven't we? We just think back to how the press hid Franklin Roosevelt's discretions and John Kennedy's discretions and LBJ's corruption, and because the press was on their side. When the press was on their side, the press wasn't doing the job that it was intended to do. Our Constitution guarantees a free press to be a prophetic voice, secularly speaking, in our country the way prophets were, religiously speaking, in the Old Testament. So let's take our Bibles and turn to 2 Chronicles chapter 13. They didn't have a press in the Old Testament. They had prophets. And they didn't have separation of church and state in Bible times. Church and state were combined. And so when the prophet spoke, he didn't just speak spiritually, he spoke politically. And that's something that we don't understand. We impose our understanding of separation of church and state on the Bible, as if in Jesus' time there was a separation of church and state. No such thing. So when Jesus speaks, for example, everything he says is political, because you can't separate church and state. Everything the prophets speak is political. Everything that's happening in the Bible is political, has political ramifications. Not like today when a pastor speaks, it may have no political ramifications. Now, what we've learned so far in our study on the kings is that for 100 years, Israel was ruled by three monarchs, three kings. King Saul, King David, and King Solomon. But because of Solomon's idolatry, God prophesied that the kingdom would be divided. And so it was. It was divided between the north and the south. The northern kingdom was established under the reign of a man named Jeroboam. The northern kingdom had 10 tribes. And the majority of the Jewish people lived in these 10 tribes. And the northern kingdom was called Israel. Now, Jeroboam was a very bad king. He instituted calf worship, idolatry to the northern kingdom. And he had disregard for the law of Moses. So that was the northern kingdom. On the other side of the split was the southern kingdom, which was known as Judah. It was made up of two tribes. And the king under the southern, the king who ruled the southern kingdom was Solomon's son, Rehoboam. For 3 years, he was a good king. But then things went crazy. He instituted idolatry into the southern kingdom. He disobeyed God, and he ended up having a corrupt administration. Last week, we ended in chapter 12 and verse 16. Chapter 12 and verse 16. Talking about the king of the southern realm. So Rehoboam, king of the south, rested. That means he died with his fathers. He was buried in the city of David. And then Abijah, his son, ruled the south in his place. So this is where we're going to pick up. Okay? Now the southern kingdom now has a new king, Abijah. The northern kingdom is still under the rule of evil Jeroboam. This guy's going to rule forever up there in the north. And while he's ruling in the north and the south, kings are going to come and go. So in the south, we have Abijah as the new king. So look at verse 1 of chapter 13. In the 18th year of Jeroboam, king of the north, Abijah became king over the south, over Judah. He reigned 3 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Micaiah, the daughter of Uriel of Gibeah. And there was a war between Abijah in the south and Jeroboam in the north. Abijah set the battle in order with an army of valiant warriors, 400,000 choice men. Jeroboam in the north drew up a battle formation against them with 800,000 choice men, men of valor. So now we see as there's a new king in the south, his name is Abijah. What do we know about this guy? Well, look what it says. In verse 2, he reigned for how long?
3 years.
That was the length of his administration, 3 years. And he's now going to come against the king of the north and against their armies. And notice in verse 3, he's outnumbered 2-1. He has 400,000 men. The army of the north has 800,000 men. Now look at 4, verse 4. Then Abijah stood on Mount Zimmerim, which is in the mountains of Ephraim. And he said, "Hear me, Jeroboam, and all of Israel, all of you in the northern kingdom." He stands. Now notice where he is, by the way. Where is he in verse 4? He's in the mountains of Ephraim. He's in the north. He's in the northern territory. He's gone from the southern kingdom. He's moved his troops up to the north, and he mounts up on this mountain, gets on the top of this mountain, and he screams out to the northern kingdom and to the king. He says, "Listen to me." He grabs their attention, and he challenges Jeroboam, the king of the north. Look what he says in verse 4. "Hear me, O Jeroboam, and all of Israel. Should you not know that the Lord God of Israel gave the dominion over Israel to who? David forever. To him and his sons, his relatives, by a covenant of salt." Now what he's saying is, you shouldn't be a king at all because God has chosen the heirs of David to rule. And guess what? I'm an heir of David. Solomon was David's son. I'm Solomon's son. I should be ruling the whole kingdom, everything. You shouldn't be ruling anything. He said, God made that covenant with David. What do you call that covenant? A covenant of salt. He made that covenant with a covenant of salt. What in the world is a covenant of salt? Does anybody have footnotes to tell you what a covenant of salt is? What does it say? A permanent covenant. And that's true. Let me show you something. Keep your hand here and move back to Numbers chapter 18. Now, a covenant of salt is mentioned a few times in the Bible. We'll look at one example. It explains exactly what it is. Numbers 18. And look at verse 19. Numbers 18 and verse 19. And here God's giving instructions to the priest. And here's what he says that they are to do. Numbers 18 and verse 19. He says, "All the heave offerings of the holy things which the children of Israel offer to the Lord, I have given to you and your sons and your daughters with you as an ordinance." Now watch this. "An ordinance forever. It is a covenant of salt forever before the Lord with you and your descendants." So that phrase, covenant of salt, speaks of an unbreakable agreement or a permanent arrangement that God makes with his people. So here he says, hey, this heave offering, this is permanent for you people. You have to do it forever. It's a covenant of salt. It's unbreakable. Do it. Make sure you follow these instructions. It's a permanent arrangement. So when Abijah stands up, look back at 2 Chronicles chapter 13, and says to, in verse 5, "You know that the God of Israel gave a dominion over David forever to him and his son, and he did it by what? A covenant of salt." That means this is permanent. You shouldn't be ruling up there. And then look what he says in verse 6. Now we're going to get Jeroboam's reaction. Let's see how he took this message. "Yet Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, the servant of Solomon, the son of David, rose up and rebelled against his Lord. Then worthless rogues gathered to him and strengthened themselves against Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, when Rehoboam was young and inexperienced, could not withstand them. And now you think to withstand the kingdom of the Lord, which is in the hand of the sons of David, and you are a great multitude, and with you are the gold calves which Jeroboam made for you as gods. Have you not cast out the priests of the Lord? Yes, they did that. They sent them down south, the sons of Aaron and the Levites. You made for yourselves priests like the people of other lands, pagan priests. So that whoever comes to consecrate himself with a young bull and seven rams may be a priest of the things that are not of God. But as for us, the Lord is our God. Now this is what Rehoboam was saying to Jeroboam. He says, but for us, so you follow these false gods, but for us, the Lord is our God, and we have not forsaken him. And the priests who minister to the Lord are the sons of Aaron, and the Levites attend to their duties. And they burn to the Lord every morning, and every evening burnt sacrifices and sweet incense. They also set the showbread in order on the pure gold table and the lampstand of gold with its lamps to burn every evening. For we keep the commandment of the Lord, but you have forsaken him. Now look to God himself. See, look, God himself is with us as our head and his priest, with sounding trumpets to sound the alarm against you. O children of Israel, do not fight against the Lord, the God of your fathers, for you shall not prosper. Now, here we have this challenge. Abijah said, you shouldn't be reigning up there, but Rehoboam didn't pay any attention to him. And so Jeroboam doesn't pay any attention to him. So Abijah says, he lays all this out. He says, can't fight against the Lord. So he basically says, don't even get in this fight, because if we end up fighting you, you have 800,000, we have 400,000. If we end up fighting you, you're going to lose this battle. What you need to do is simply put up your hands and surrender. Okay? And just reunite with the southern kingdom. Let's get this kingdom back together. Okay? So look at Jeroboam's response. Look what he says in verse 13. But Jeroboam caused an ambush to go around about them, behind them. So they were in the front of Judah, and the ambush was behind. And when Judah looked around, to their surprise, the battle line was at both the front and the rear. So Jeroboam said, we're not uniting with anybody. In fact, while Abijah's up there talking, he sends his troops behind him, and they ambush him. And his troops are just like this. Here's the army of Judah, the southern kingdom. And here's Jeroboam's troops on each side of them, and they're going to ambush them. Look what else it says, verse 14. And they cried out to the Lord and to the priest. Now look what happens in the southern kingdom. They cried out to the Lord and the priest, sounded the trumpets. When the men of Judah gave a shout, and as the men of Judah shouted, it happened that God struck Jeroboam and all of Israel before Abijah and Judah. And the children of Israel, that's the northern kingdom, fled before Judah, the southern kingdom, and God delivered them into their hands. Then Abijah and his people struck them with great slaughter, so that 500,000 choice men of the northern kingdom fell. Wiped out 500 of the 800,000. Thus the children of Israel, that's the northern kingdom, were subdued at that time, and the children of Judah, that is the southern kingdom, prevailed. Because what? They relied on the Lord God of their fathers. And Abijah, king of the southern kingdom, pursued Jeroboam and took cities from him. Bethel, with its villages, Jeshanah, and its villages, and Ephraim with its villages. And so Jeroboam, that's the king of the north, never recovered strength again in the days of Abijah. Now, what I want you to notice here is that not only does God stand on the side of the southern kingdom, and the north is just decimated, but then the southern king goes into the north region and he takes over some of the northern cities. Now, one of those northern cities is found in verse 19. And what city is that? Bethel. Now, what's so significant about Bethel? Do you remember that from last week or the week before? That was one of the cities where Jeroboam set up the calf god, the golden calf god. Well, now guess what? That's just been wiped out. Calf worship in that city's wiped out. He still has another city up farther north called Dan. Still going on up there. But so what's happened is the southern kingdom has come and taken over some of that territory in the north. So Jeroboam doesn't recover. And then look what it says at the end of verse 20. And the Lord struck him, and he died. Now, this is a little confusing because Jeroboam actually outlives Abijah, the king of the south. He's going to outlive him for about 3 or 4 more years. But this is just a summary statement that simply says, and guess what? From this point on, after he was defeated, his life went downhill and his administration was weakened and his days were numbered and eventually he died. Now, the rest of the acts of Abijah, or look at verse 21. But Abijah grew mightily. He married 14 wives. He's the king of the south. He got 22 sons and 16 daughters. Now, the rest of the acts of Abijah and his ways and his sayings are written in the annals of the prophet Iddo. So Abijah rested with his fathers. That means he died. And they buried him in the city of David, Jerusalem. Then Asa, his son, reigned in his place. In his days, in the days of Asa, the land was quiet for 10 years. So, what we have is that Jeroboam is defeated and his kingdom starts going downhill, or his administration goes downhill. Abijah wins the victory. He eventually dies, and now his son takes over in the south. And his name is Asa. Now, what we know about Asa, we know from 1 Kings a little bit, that he takes over the reign of the south in Jeroboam's 20th year as king of the north. We also know from that passage that he's a teenager when he takes over. He's a minor when he takes over. The one who's really ruling the show is his grandmother, the queen mother. Okay. He's the king, but his queen mother is a major advisor to him at this point. So now what we have is his first reforms. Probably when he turns 21, these are his first reforms. Now look what it says in verse 2. Asa did what was good and right in the eyes of the Lord his God. For he removed the altars of foreign gods and the high places. And he broke down the sacred pillars, and he cut down the wooden images, and he commanded Judah, the southern kingdom, to seek the Lord God of their fathers, and to observe the law and the commandment. He also removed the high places and the incense altars from all the cities of Judah. And the kingdom was quiet under him. So what we have is his first reform is he gets rid of idolatry. Basically wipes it out. At least the worship centers of idolatry. That his father, grandfather, Rehoboam, had established in the southern kingdom. So this is his first reform. Now we come to his defense policy. Look at verses 6 through 8. And he built fortified cities in Judah, for the land had rest. He had no war in those years, because the Lord had given him rest. Therefore he said to Judah, let us go build these cities and make great walls around them, and towers, and gates, and bars, while the land is yet before us, because we have sought the Lord our God. We have sought him, and he has given us rest on every side. And so they built, and they prospered. And Asa had an army of 300,000 from Judah, who carried shields and spears, and from Benjamin another 280,000 men who carried shields and drew bows. All these were mighty men of valor. Okay, so now what happens? He has peace, and now he builds up defense forces around all of his key cities. And he's got a standing army to defend themselves. They're going to have to defend themselves because look what happens in verse 9. Then Zerah, the Ethiopian, Egypt, came against them with an army of a million men and 300 chariots, and he came to Maresha. So Asa went out against him, and they set troops in battle array in the valley of Zephathah and Maresha. And Asa cried out to the Lord. Now watch this. He's going to fight this Ethiopian, this million-man army. Asa cried out to the Lord, his God, and he said, Lord, there's nothing for you to help, whether with many or with those who have no power. Help us, O Lord our God, for we rest on you, and in your name we go against this multitude. O Lord, you are our God. Do not let man prevail against you. And so the Lord struck the Ethiopians before Asa and Judah, and the Ethiopians fled. And Asa and the people who were with him pursued them to Gerar. So the Ethiopians were overthrown, and they could not recover, for they were broken before the Lord and his army, and they carried away much spoil. Then they defeated all the cities around Gerar, for the fear of the Lord came upon them, and they plundered the cities. There was exceedingly much spoil in them. They also attacked the livestock enclosures and carried off sheep and camels in abundance, and they returned to Jerusalem. So, here's a man who's been following the Lord. He's had peace for 10 years. He built up his defense forces. He's invaded, and God stands up for him, and he defeats a million-man army. Now, God sends a prophet. Okay, God sends a prophet. Now, we said that these kings always have prophets who advise them. So now comes the prophet. And what we want to do when we study the kings of the Old Testament is to see how they respond to the words of the prophet. So let's see what happens. Look at verse chapter 15. Now the Spirit of the Lord came upon Azariah, the son of Oded. And he went and he met Asa the king. And he said to him, Hear me, Asa, and all of Judah and Benjamin. The Lord is with you while you are with him. The Lord is with you while you're with him. The Lord is with you while you're with him. What happens if you forsake him? He's not with you. He'll forsake you. If you seek him, he'll be found by you. But if you forsake him, he will forsake you. For a long time, Israel, that's the north, has been without the true God, without a teaching of priests, without the law. But when in their time of trouble, they turned to the Lord, the God of Israel, and sought him, even found them. He had mercy on the north whenever they returned to him. And in those times there was no peace to the one who went out, nor to the one who came in. The great turmoil was on all the inhabitants of the land. So nation was destroyed by nation and city by city, for God troubled them with every adversary. But look at this. But you Asa, southern kingdom, but you be strong. Do not let your hands be weak, for your work shall be rewarded. Now there is his message. The north has forsaken God. When they've turned to him, he's honored them. But for the most part, they have forsaken him. He's allowed nation against nation to come against them. They've been devastated. But you, be strong, verse 17. Do not let your hands be weak, for your work shall be rewarded. Now that should sound familiar to you, that statement right there. That's a word for all God's people. You've heard it before when we've studied Galatians and we've studied Thessalonians. You've heard this before. You've heard the statement, let us not grow weary in well-doing. Look, that sounds something like that? Look, do not grow weary in well-doing, for in due season if we shall reap if we do not lose heart or faith. So that's what he's saying here. He's saying what you need to do is you need to be strong. Don't lose faith. Don't become weak. Persevere. And when you do, guess what? Your work will be rewarded. That's the word of the prophet. That's the word of the prophet. Okay? Now, look what happens. Look at verse 8. Let's see Asa's next reform, which is very interesting. And when Asa heard these words and the prophecy of Oded the prophet, he took courage. He removed the abominable idols from the land of Judah. There were still some idols hanging around, maybe hidden. And in Benjamin, and from the cities which he had taken in the mountains of Ephraim. And he restored the altar of the Lord that was before the vestibule of the Lord. He goes up into that region that he had taken over those cities. They still had some idols, and he ripped those idols out. Then he gathered all of Judah and Benjamin and those who dwelt from Ephraim and Manasseh and Simeon, that region that he took in the north, for they came over to him in great numbers from Israel, from the northern kingdom, when they saw the Lord his God was with him. And so they gathered together at Jerusalem in the third month of the 15th year of the reign of Asa. And they offered to the Lord at that time 700 bulls and 700,000 sheep from the spoils that they had bought, that they had brought. And then they entered into a covenant to seek the Lord their God, the God of their fathers, with all their heart and with all their soul. It's important that you get that. They sought, based on the prophet's message, to seek God with all their heart and all their soul. And whosoever would not seek the Lord of Israel, the God of Israel, was put to death, whether small or great, whether man or woman. And they took an oath before the Lord with a loud voice, with shouting, with trumpets, with ram's horns. And Judah rejoiced at the oath, for they had sworn with all their heart, and they sought him with all their soul. He was found in them, and the Lord gave them rest all around. So, guess what they did? See, back in verse 2, the Lord is with you, if you're with him. If you seek him, he'll be found in you. That's what they're doing. With all their heart, with all their soul. So what we have is we have Asa hearing the words of the prophet, and he leads his nation to give their wholehearted devotion to the Lord. But this is going to have an effect on his family. Look what he does. He gives his heart to the Lord in that way. Verse 16. Verse 16. Okay, now look at this. Verse 16. He also removed Maacah, the mother of Asa the king. Now the writer is telling us this. Now this is not his mother. This is his grandmother. This is the queen mother. Okay. Sometimes she served as a sort of a surrogate mother. He removes her. This is his queen mother. From being queen mother because she had made an obscene image of Asherah, and Asa cut down her obscene image. His grandmother was worshiping an image. And so what he did is he cut it down. And he removed her. He removed her from office. She's the queen mother. You know, Queen Elizabeth's mother was living. What was her name? Mary. And the queen mother, and she lived to be about 100 years old, and she died. She was an important figure. Imagine Queen Elizabeth publicly just saying, "You're out of here!" Kicks her right out on the street. Gets to go out with all the other people. That's what he did to the queen mother. Why? Because she was worshiping an idol. And so it says he cut it down, and then he crushed it into verse 16, and he burned it in the brook Kidron. But the high places were not removed from Israel. That is the northern kingdom. Those areas that he was not able to reach. He wasn't able to get to those idols. Nevertheless, the heart of Asa was loyal all his days. Now, it's important that you get this phrase. The heart of Asa was loyal all of his days. He never forsook the Lord. He never forsakes the Lord. Now, it's important you get that in light of what's going to happen in these next scenes. Verse 18. He also brought into the house of God the things that his father had dedicated and that he himself had dedicated, silver and gold and utensils. And there was no war until the 35th year of the reign of Asa. So what we have here is we have a situation where Asa is doing everything that he's supposed to do. He's following the prophet. And if the story ended here, it would be a great story. And we would say that Asa was probably the greatest king that ever that Israel ever had based on this. But it doesn't end here. And here's the rest of the story. Look at chapter 16. In the 36th year, the 35 years in verse 19, verse 1, 30, for 35 years things go great. But look at this. Verse 1 of chapter 16. In the 36th year of the reign of Asa, Baasha, king of Israel, came up against Judah and built Ramah that he might let none go out or come in to Asa, king of Judah. Now what we have happening is that a new king has now come in the north. Jeroboam has died, and this is the new king of the north, Baasha. And what he does is he builds new cities and walls because what he has, he's having defectors. People leaving the northern kingdom, coming into the southern kingdom where there's peace, where there's true worship. It's like, you know, people escaping a communist country. They want to get out of there. No one wants to be oppressed. So they head for freedom. And that's what was happening. Everybody up north who was oppressed under these bad kings were flocking to the south. And so the new king of the north tries to cut that off. Then look at verse 2. Then Asa brought silver and gold from the treasuries of the house of the Lord and of the king's house. And look what he does with it. He has these millions of dollars. And he sent it to Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, who dwelt in Damascus, saying, "Let there be a treaty between you and me, as there was between my father and your father. See, I have sent you silver and gold. Come and break your treaty with who? Baasha, king of Israel, so that he will withdraw from me." So, Ben-Hadad heeded King Asa, and he sent the captains of his army against the cities of the northern kingdom, the cities of Israel. They attacked Ejon and Dan and Abel-Maim and all the storage cities of Naphtali. And now it happened when Baasha heard that. When he heard that a treaty had been made with Syria, they had a great army, and they were backing the southern kingdom. When the king of the north heard that, he stopped building Ramah, and he ceased his work. And then King Asa took all of Judah, and he carried away the stones and the timber of Ramah, which Baasha had used for building. And with them, he built Geba and Mizpah. So, what happens is this good king, for 35 years, enters into an alliance with a pagan king from Syria to get on his side so they can invade the north. Would you say that's... Was that good? Was that the spiritual wisdom that he should have had? Should he have been trusting the Lord, or should he have been trusting a treaty that he made with this king? Now this king, Ben-Hadad, had already had a treaty. Guess who his treaty was with? With the north. He was behind them. Asa in the south said, "Hey, break that treaty with them. Make a treaty with us. Hey, here's millions of dollars." He took him right out of the temple. Right out of the king's house. Made a treaty with him. And this guy switched sides and came on the side of the north. Goes up on the side of the south. Goes up in the north. And the north, of course, has to retreat. Now we come to Asa's last years. Look at verse 7. In fact, we have a message of the prophet first. At that time, Hanani, the seer, the prophet, came to Asa, the king of Judah, and he said to him, "Because you've relied on the king of Syria, and you have not relied on the Lord your God, therefore the army of the king of Syria has escaped from your hand." Remember that first war with the Ethiopians? And the Lubim, not a huge army, with many chariots and horsemen, yet because you relied on the Lord, he delivered them into your hand. For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong on behalf of those whose heart is loyal to him. In this you have done foolishly. Therefore, from now on, you shall have wars. There won't be peace in your land anymore. Then Asa, look how he responds to the words now. Look how he responds to the words of God from the prophet. Then Asa was angry with the seer and put him in prison. He didn't like that. For he was enraged at him because of this. And then Asa, of course, had to take the next step. He oppressed some of the people at that time. Because the people said, what are you doing? This is the prophet of God. He'll throw him in prison. Guess what he did? He said, oh yeah, watch what I'm going to do to you. This guy goes crazy. See? 1 year. For 35 years, a great reign. 36, things started unwinding. Why? Because he does not do what the prophet has said. He stops listening to the prophet and he stops doing what the first prophet said. So now we come to his last years. Note that the acts of Asa, verse 11, first and last, the good and the bad, are indeed written in the books of the kings of Judah and Israel. And in the 39th year of his reign, Asa became diseased in his feet. And his malady was severe. And it was so severe that he becomes incapacitated, and he has to bring his son on to be a co-regent, a co-king with him. His son's name is Jehoshaphat. See him in a couple weeks. Yet in his disease, he did not seek the Lord. Now you think that he would say, hey, why are my feet like this? Why can't I walk? What's happened? What are those scales on my feet? Why are my bones so weak? Why are my ankles weak? I can hardly stand up. Lord, are you trying to get my attention? Look. Yet, in the middle of verse 12, in his disease, he did not seek the Lord. But what did he seek? Doctors! In war, he didn't seek the Lord. Who did he seek? Syria. Trust in the arm of the flesh. This sickness he has, obviously, is from the Lord. Wouldn't you agree? He could have sought a million doctors. Which one of them do you think would have healed him? Not one. You know why? Because it was from the Lord, wasn't it? So instead of seeking the Lord, he sought the physicians. And so here's the bottom line. And so Asa rested with his fathers, and he died in the 41st year of his reign. Look, he reigns for 41 years. That's a long reign as king, isn't it? In itself. And they buried him in his own tomb, which he had made for himself in the city of David. And they laid him in the bed, which was filled with spices and various ingredients, prepared in a mixture of ointments. And they made a great burning for him, a great sacrifice on his behalf. So, remember that prophecy and that promise back in 15:7? Be strong, don't become weak, and you'll be rewarded. Or as Paul said, don't be weary in well-doing. For you will reap. If you don't lose heart, he lost heart. He became weak. And although he started strong, he ended up finishing poorly. And so the last 6 or 7 years of his reign was absolutely a disaster. And instead of being considered one of Israel's great kings, he ends up being a bad king. He ruined it all in the last 6 years of his administration. If he had quit when he was 30, after 35 years, they said the greatest king who ever lived. Started strong, ended poorly. Now, let me just summarize this. I want you to think of the positives and the negatives. Okay, positive. He removes idolatry. That's positive. He does that early in his ministry. That's a positive. He listens to Azariah, the prophet, the first time a prophet speaks. That's positive. He puts the queen mother out of office. That's a positive. He even stood for God and against his family. That was a positive. Then, on the negative side, and all that was for 35 years, and there was peace in the land and no war. Wouldn't you like to have that in America? 35 years and no war? Peace in the land? Would that be the greatest thing that we've ever had? Can you remember a time when we ever had 35 years of peace? Ever? Ever? So then he makes a treaty with Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria. That's a bad choice. He rejects the prophet's word. That's a bad choice. It puts him in jail. He becomes a tyrant and he oppresses his people. That's bad. He gets a disease, becomes incapacitated, instead of seeking God, asking for forgiveness and to be healed. He seeks physician. Until his dying day, they can't heal him and he dies. Yet, the whole time, he never breaks the covenant with God. There's never a time that he says, I'm not like the kings of the north. I reject God. I'm going to replace the priesthood. I'm going to replace the sacrifices. He never fully rejects God. And in many ways, I think he's very typical of many Christians today who love God. They serve God. But they end up not doing it wholeheartedly. Along with serving God, they start trusting the arm of the flesh. And they start doing things their way. And sometimes, guess what? It happens late in life. Not when you're 20 or 30 or 40 or 50. It happens late in life. And you end up starting, you end up start well, but you end up going down the hill from that time onward. And that's this tragic story of King Asa. A great king for 35 years, but a bad king for the last 67 years. Now next week what we're going to do is we're going to switch from the southern kingdom. Because in 41 years of reign, guess what's happening up north? Kings are coming from north, coming from north. There's about four or five kings that are, take place during this guy's reign in the south. So next week we're going to switch and we're going to go to the north. And we're going to see all these little kings who have 4 to 5 year reign. And then we're going to be introduced to Ahab. In the north, he was really a bad king. And in the south, Jehoshaphat, who reigns at the exact same time as Ahab. And that's really good. Father, I thank you for your word. I thank you that we can get a handle on it, so we can see what's happening. In these men's lives, we can look at the lives of our country and the lives of our churches. We can look at our lives. We can see human frailty. And when we read a biography of somebody, we can look at their lives and after the fact. We can see where they made their mistakes. Even when they couldn't see what they were doing at the time. Because they were either deceived, blindsided, not thinking clearly. When we read of their lives, we can see it clearly after the fact. And then we can make commitments in our own lives based on those examples. So, Lord, help us not to be like this man who starts well and ends poorly. Help us to persevere and be faithful all the way to the end. Help us not to be weary in good doing. Help us not to give up. Help us to realize in due season we will reap a reward if we don't faint. We persevere to the end. Oh, Lord, help us to learn these lessons. Christ's name we pray.